Good morning. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Former Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen's recent memoir makes the case that he's had a close-up view of Wisconsin politics over the past 40 years. It's called Ringside Seat, but for a significant portion of that time, Cullen was right in the middle of that ring.
Cullen grew up in Janesville, and he worked on the staff of former Congressman Les Aspin before first being elected to office himself. After rising to the level of Senate Majority Leader, he left elected office and joined Republican Governor Tommy Thompson's cabinet. Cullen left government altogether then and worked in private industry for 20 years.
But in 2010, Tim Cullen won back his old Senate seat, which put him right in the middle of the most tumultuous period in Wisconsin's recent political history, the Act 10 fight, and the move by the Democrats in the Senate to stall the bill by leaving the state. But at the beginning of it all, Cullen never even planned to go into politics. We reached him last month by phone. Tim Cullen, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So being a politician was not your initial plan in life. I know it has been some time, but why did you decide public service was a more pressing calling than becoming a teacher?
Well, that's a hard thing to say one is better than the other. I would have loved a career as a high school social studies teacher, but I had a chance. I got interested in politics. I was a political science major, and I was elected to Janesville City Council. Then I met a fellow named Les Aspin, who was running for Congress for the first time, and he won in 1970, and he asked me to join his staff, and sort of the rest was history.
And so why was that experience working with Les Aspin so important to what you ended up doing?
Well, it was a wonderful job to have. If you like politics, like being in politics, to be on the staff of a district staff of a congressman, and your job is simply to go to all the post offices in the first district, Racine, Kenosha, Rock, Walworth counties, then, and talk to people who come there who have problems with federal, state, local government, and then try to help them. That was my job. I mean, it was a pretty neat job.
Did you feel like you were having an impact on their? I mean, you write about some of their problems, and some of them were solvable, and some of them really were not.
Well, I think at a minimum, they had somebody to listen to them describe their problem, and they had somebody who tried to help them. Now, we didn't fix everything. I don't think that actually people expect that they can come to a congressional office and everything will get fixed, but we tried. We had a lot of success. And it was really was personally rewarding to meet and talk with people and then find out that whatever they wanted, we were able to help with.
One of the interesting aspects to this book is your attempt to dispel some notions that we have about politics. And one of them that I think was interesting in particular is that with very few exceptions, you write, it's unlikely that politicians are ever really friends with each other. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because you're thrown together in the legislature. You don't choose each other. The voters around the state send 132 legislators to Madison. So you aren't automatically, it isn't automatic that you're going to like the people you work with, but you need to work with them. You need to like them. I think the idea that actually you become friends, at least the sense that I guess there's probably two types of friends. There's people who you get along with, which I think are more like good acquaintances. And then there are friends. Friends to me are people who you can share your problems with, your weaknesses with, and so on, and really be very personally connected to them. And I think to have that kind of friendship in politics is just not very likely. You'd be telling somebody else who may or may not always agree with you or may oppose you in the future, you'd be telling them you're false. And why would you do that? So I don't think it really works, but the word is always used in politics. Everybody always says, this is my good friend, Senator so-and-so, whether they like him or not, they'll use the phrase.
Well, and you kind of circle back to this image that I think a lot of us have, that there was, you know, once a time when politicians from opposing sides would go out together for a drink after work, but you say that was never really the case.
Well, what I say is it's kind of a myth that's why they got along better. I don't think there's anything damaging about going out for a drink with someone from the other party or your own party. It has a more than better 50-50 chance of being helpful and knowing each other beyond politics and having some kind of relationship rather than just whether you're for or against a particular bill. But the idea that you really work together well because you go out and have a drink with somebody, I think that's what's really exaggerated. I point out in the book that really why you can work with somebody of either party is because you have established a level of trust with each other. It's more about trust and keeping your word, which allows you to work with people, I think, more than whether you've had a drink with them or not. I point out how got along very long well with Tommy Thompson, former Governor Thompson. He and I never had a drink together.
Well, and along those lines, you served in the cabinet of Tommy Thompson. What was it about his offer that led you to leave the Senate? And, you know, you talk about a particular level of trust you had with him.
Well, there were several reasons, some personal and political, why I chose to do that. I'd been the majority leader for 4.5 years. A lot of the senators that were there when I was picked to be majority leader had gone. There's still good people there. But then you can stay too long in jobs. And the cabinet job he offered me was, I think, the most important one, which was then called Department of Health and Social Services. It was the largest state agency at that time. And there was not a separate Department of Corrections then. So the whole prison system was in Health and Social Services. So I saw an opportunity to be in charge and run the prison system, the Medicaid program, nursing home regulation, and a variety of other state programs. And these are a lot of things I cared about working on, and it was very attractive to me at that point in my life.
And at the same time, you reflected on that decision and the thought that maybe it was also an effort to get a Democrat out of the Senate. Do you have any regrets as you look back?
No, I don't. And that story was around from like day one. I don't happen to believe that because my state senate seat, which I had held up until then, it wasn't mine, but the one I represented.
Sure.
I had just won that November with 63% of the vote in that seat. And I just basically thought that if I could get 63% of a good Democratic candidate, I'd be able to get at least 51%. So I thought that a Democrat would keep my seat when I left. And of course, that turned out not to be true. But I think there was a great chance to have kept the seat. And actually, the other thing was the Senate was 20-13 Democrat at that time. So I thought even in the worst case, the seat was lost. The Democrats would still control the Senate in 1914, which is a pretty good margin, which is a Republican margin today.
And it was not that much longer that you decided to leave government altogether and go into to private industry. What was it about that choice that it was the right place and the right time and the right decision for you?
Well, I would have loved to have stayed as secretary for another year or two, and because I loved what I was doing, I enjoyed working Governor Thompson's cabinet. But Blue Cross made this job opportunity, which would be. They had the Evansville office, which was just 17 miles from my home. And my wife and I were just had our first child, and I couldn't stay in the cabinet forever, nor did I want to. And I thought maybe it was time to go on to the private sector and support my family with a job and maybe some more security than politics. So, in fact, I asked Blue Cross, could I stay in this job? Would this job with you be open a year from now? Could I stay another year as cabinet secretary, they not surprisingly, as I look back, they said no. But that was how I felt it. I really loved the job. But sometimes opportunities in life don't come exactly when you want them to on your schedule, and you have to sometimes take advantage of them.
So you look back and describe at some length the way government worked under the 12 previous governors before Scott Walker. What do you think the storyline of that stability was? You say there's some, you know, there's some real commonalities in the way governing was done through those 12 administrations.
Well, and we go back to 1950, and of those 12 governors, 6 were Democrats and 6 were Republicans by coincidence, I guess. But what I think was common to all 12 of those governors was they first of all had a very good understanding of each of them, of the people of Wisconsin and what the sort of settled values were of the people of Wisconsin in a variety of areas that I talked about in the book. And they governed in a way that they, each of them, I think, wanted to expand their base and be more popular and have a broad consensus on the way they led Wisconsin. They thought that was how Wisconsin wanted to be led, and I agree with them. So they never governed too far from the political center. Republicans governed center-right, the Democrats governed center-left. And that, I think Wisconsin came to expect that. And I think it's why I say in the book that people were not terribly angry or deeply concerned if the governor candidate of the other party happened to win. They'd wish their own candidate had won, but they weren't worried that the other candidate was going to go off half-cocked in some wild direction, because they come to see over those 60 years that that's not what happened as we went from Democratic governor to Republican governor. And then I make the contrast that all the wisdom and judgment of those 12 predecessors, Governor Walker threw out the window, decided to govern only from the right.
Well, so what did you see? What do you think was the opening that Scott Walker saw? What did he understand about Wisconsin politics that enabled him to change the status quo so abruptly, if you will, and have what he claims as his political successes over the past 5-6 years?
Well, I think he's better to answer this than me, but I think he thought that he's very much a conservative person, very much on the far right of Republican politics, and he had the most Republican conservative legislature, that more conservative than any of the his predecessors had. So it was easy for him to pull that legislature way over to the right with him. And I also think it fit his national political ambitions. You can see he's out of the presidential race, but you can see what's going on. Candidates in that primary seem to be fighting over each other to be the most conservative one. And so he pulled Wisconsin to the right. And I think for a long time after he became governor, the public had trouble catching on to what was going on. They certainly all caught on to Act 10 right away, but he then continued to pull the state further to the right. And I think the state's finally caught on to him. I witnessed the Marquette poll, which has him at 38% approval when he used to be around 48 or 50. So I think the state's figured out how far he's pulled the state against their common values, and they don't like it.
Well, and as all of the sort of political winds were shifting in some ways, you returned to the state Senate. What did you see as the differences in the body that you returned to versus the place that you left?
Well, I saw a lot of things. One of them was that all the institutions in the legislature and around the legislature had all become much more partisanized than when I was there before. I also found that there were fewer moderate Republicans in the Republican caucuses and fewer moderate Democrats in the Democratic caucuses than there had been back in the 1970s. I found that the legislative leadership was much more involved in running and controlling the campaigns and got involved in the primaries of their own party, and the leaders had got much more control of campaign money and were getting involved in those primaries. They could direct the money to the candidate of their choice in the primary. And quite often that candidate was further to the left of the Democratic side, further to the right of the Republican side. And so we had a much more philosophically divided legislature in 2011 than what I would have experienced back in the 70s and early 80s.
I'm curious. There are some people out there that think the time has come for open primaries, where everybody would be thrown into one pool, and they say it would keep people from going too far to the left or too far to the right. What do you make of the idea of open primaries?
Well, I haven't thought enormous about that, but it's not something that I'm against out of the chute. I can tell you that. I think that we need to give an opportunity for people who are not extremists to have a more central role in picking our candidates, because I still think the people of Wisconsin are much more moderate, centrist people. The fact that very conservative Republicans win and very often liberal Democrats win is because those are the only two choices that voters have in the general election. So that doesn't mean that they wouldn't prefer somebody more moderate, but they're not in the ballot anymore.
You mentioned Act 10 a few minutes ago, and one of the things that's interesting in this book, you print in its entirety the transcript of the call that Governor Walker received from a prankster posing as David Koch during the Act 10 controversy. Your name is in that transcript in some prominent places. Can you reflect on how you were seen by the governor and Republican leaders at that time?
Well, I think I was suspicious at the time, and I think it's very clear now. Especially after you see that transcript, they saw me as somehow as a tool that would be useful to them, that somehow I was going to break with the Democrats and come back from Illinois alone, or that I was a mouthpiece. Another Walker points out at one point he talked to me, and he told this fake Koch guy, that Ian Murphy, that I would go back and tell him. He told me that he doesn't negotiate, he doesn't bend, and he thinks that I would go back and inform the rest of the caucus of that. Well, I never bothered to do that. I just thought it was bluster from him, and the rest of the caucus knew that anyway. It wasn't news to me. I think a couple of key things about the call that I think the transcript, why I wanted to make sure the transcript was in the book. One was the way he describes me as someone who's not a partisan, and I'm just there to get something done. And then he says, but he's not like us, meaning him and the Republicans. Well, if I'm there just to get something done and I'm not like them, then what are they?
It is, of course, not for nothing that the title of this book is Ringside Seats, which is, of course, a boxing metaphor.
Yes, and it isn't meant. Some people have read it that way, obviously, because there's a picture of a boxing ring on the cover, obviously. But I wasn't really thinking so much of a boxing ring, although it is a good photo capture, but it was more that I was not only in the ring but on the side of the ring watching Wisconsin politics. So the publisher thought that was a good thing to put on the cover, and I agreed with him.
The book almost reads like a memoir of someone who is planning to seek office. Do you have any thoughts of going back again?
Well, I'm going to be 72 next month, or excuse me, 72 this month, and so I would just tell you really bluntly, if I was going to be 62 or 52, I sure would be thinking about trying to change the state and probably run for governor. But I think that in some ways, I think you're better off to try to find somebody a little younger to make the race than me. But I thought my contribution maybe to trying to make some changes in this state was to write this book, and hopefully people will read it or hear about it and give them hope.
Do you see any future Tim Collins out there?
Well, people ask me that almost every day, and I really don't have any idea. If you're talking basically about the 2018 Democratic candidate for governor, which is the next governor's race, I couldn't name three people today and say, well, I don't know which one it is, but I'm sure it's one of these three. I can't even do that. It's completely wide open. It's still early enough, but I think by the end of 2016, by the beginning of 2017, some serious candidates will likely emerge, and I think they're going to have to. I think you're going to have to think about a two-year race. You aren't necessarily campaigning every day for 2 years, but you have to build a campaign and build an organization. That all takes some time.
Would you imagine if the Democrats can't have at least a handful of names emerge, this is going to be a troublesome race?
Well, but they do. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a most prestigious job in Wisconsin in public life, which is to be the governor of Wisconsin, and there will be good Democrats. I think what we may well do is not just look in the legislature for candidates, which people so often do. I point out in the book that only one Democratic candidate for governor since 1948 has won as a sitting legislator, going right from the legislature to the governorship, and that was Gaylord Nelson in 1958. So we need to look beyond the legislature. It's so great if we find a legislator or two, but to outstate mayors, to county administrators, to individual citizens who have done something really terrific in the private sector, for example, but haven't been in politics, that might want to run. I don't think we should just limit ourselves to only the people who already hold office.
Well, Tim Cullen, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for reflecting on your career with us, and hope we'll talk again.
Good. I hope people. I should say one last thing, which is that the I'm giving all the profits from this book. I'm making no money. I'm giving all the profits to a scholarship foundation I started in Janesville for students of color who want to be teachers and then come back and teach in Janesville. So I don't have much trouble bragging about the book and encouraging people to buy it, because I'm not going to make any money on it. That's exactly the way I want it.
Well, thanks for pointing that out. I appreciate it. And really, thanks for taking the time to talk.
Okay, well, thank you, Mitch, very much.
Former Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen's memoir is called Ringside Seat, Wisconsin Politics, the 1970s to Scott Walker. We reached him at his home in Janesville, and our interview with him first aired in February.